there is, you know, incredible academic preparation happening here, incredible spiritual preparation and maturation and growth happening here.
My success stories have really just been one after another. They're successful to me because I love to see people's lives change.
It was a remarkable experience.
Hello and welcome to Latter-day Profiles. I'm Brian Howard. We're here on the campus of Brigham Young, University of Idaho. And joining me today is Jeff Wheeler. Jeff, welcome.
So great to be here. Thank
you. Give you a fist pump here in the days of COVID. Glad to have you here. Jeff is an author. A lot of people who are fans, especially the fantasy fiction that you write, will recognize these books. Some of the latest, The Thief's Daughter, The King's Traitor, The Hollow Crown, The Silent Shield, Prism Cloud, and a lot of these are trilogies and multiple titles, you've got lots of. How many books have you written, Jeff?
You know, I'm on 34 right now, and I kind of have lost track, kind of have to do the math sometimes when I get asked.
Yeah. Also the founder of an electronic magazine, an e-zine called Deep Magic, that is all about this type of writing, and which is a lot of work, actually, which we're going to talk about a little bit. Jeff, how did you get into this? You know, well, let's talk about growing up, because was this writing always in your blood growing up? Do you remember wanting to write or be involved in this kind of thing?
Well, when I was a kid, I was more interested in being an artist. I loved drawing, and my teachers always praised me for that. But when I was in junior high, that's when the writing bug really hit me. I happened to just be looking at a book in a library, said, this looks interesting. It was fantasy, and picked it up and started reading it, and it just hooked me. And I said, I've got this thing all figured out. I know exactly what the author's going to do. And he blew all my plans up by the third chapter. I mean, everything was not what I expected. And by the time I finished that book, it just lit a fire inside of me that I said, I want other people to feel the way I'm feeling right now. And how can I do that? And it's been a long road, of course. But that was really kind of the defining moment where that bug kind of got caught, and I had to be a writer.
That fire was lit. So did you continue to do stuff through like junior high school? Did you, put together, write some, books, even though maybe not published? What did you do during that time?
Well, I started writing short stories in junior high, but they were horrible. by the time I got to high school, I really decided I wanted to focus on writing more than artwork. I wrote 5 novels while I was in high school.
Wow.
None of them are any good. But again, it was, a lot of times my family members were watching television. I'm upstairs on my computer, just, typing away just story after story, kind of strange thrillers, kind of political thrillers, kind of story. And it was a lot of practice. I actually submitted some of them for publication while I was in high school and thought I was all that. But of course, got rejected. But for me, it just kept me excited. It kept me wanting to do it. And so, I decided, when I get to college, do I want to, be an English major? Do I want to be a history major? I was kind of debating between the two, and I ended up choosing history because that's where a lot of my story ideas come from.
So instead, I had to learn to precisely write the words, get the storytelling down from stories of the past, and that's pretty cool.
Absolutely.
You served a mission in there. Where'd you go?
I was called to the Oklahoma Tulsa mission, but it split while I was in my first area and became the Oklahoma City mission, and that's where I spent the 2 years between Texas and different places around Oklahoma City and some of the smaller towns there.
Interesting. What kind of impact do you feel like that had on you, moving forward, both career-wise and for your spiritual life?
Well, it affected my career in ways that I couldn't have predicted. So while I was on my mission, I was the mission secretary for 6 months, and I got to learn about the different, computer platforms, the different softwares that went with this. This is back in before the dot-com boom even. And when I got home from my mission, I was looking for a job, and I went to a temp agency, and they said, "Do you know these software platforms?" Which were exactly the ones I had learned on my mission, and I was a very fast typist, as you could imagine. And so I got hired on the spot with Intel Corporation in Silicon Valley, just as a temp, just to work in their training department for the summer. Well, that ended up becoming a full-time job that put myself through college. Mm. So tech industry is in my blood. My dad worked for Hewlett Packard for his whole career, for the most part. And so being part of Silicon Valley and all those tech startups was part of, you know, part of my DNA for a long, long time.
Yeah, you grew up in that area, right? That's where your dad works.
You're yes. Down
there. So that was like coming home. You're actually working right in your own backyard.
And it was quite a contrast. Like living in, you know, growing up in the Bay Area and then going to Oklahoma, it was like very much of a different environment, but it was good. I love, my favorite places were the small towns that I lived in. And I loved the, I didn't like the tornadoes. That wasn't so great, but it was just a different part of the country and a different experience. It was wonderful.
Now, I was reading you through your bio. You're one of the lucky ones. You had a girlfriend who actually stuck around and you got married right after your mission. How did you make that work? How did that happen?
Well, it's funny because so many times on my mission, people kept asking me, are you going to get, you know, has she broken up with you yet? And I didn't think that she was going to. We knew each other. We didn't go to the same high school. She went to a private Catholic high school in the Bay Area. I went to a public school, but we worked at the same after school job and we became friends, became competitors. We would argue all the time, but her faith began to be challenged, you know, during that time in high school. And she had a class assignment to attend another church. And she asked me if she could attend church with me. And I was like, sure, that sounds great. And so after attending church, she then asked, are there any classes or anything that you can learn more about, you know, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints? And I said, well, it just so happens we have these missionaries. And my older brother was serving a mission at that time. And she actually took the discussions in my home. And so it turned out to be a really neat experience. She was baptized while I was on my mission because her parents said, this is going a little fast. Why don't you wait a while? She waited a year, attended church every week, paid her tithing, even though she wasn't a member. And I just had a feeling that she was going to stick around for the long haul, and she did.
That's great. So you got on mission. How long after that when you were married?
I got back in 92. We got married in 94.
Okay. So you went through college, doing history, then you went back. You worked for Intel, right? Continued on working for Intel. But you're still writing all the time, right?
Absolutely.
So pick up from there. So you're writing. Are you trying to get submitted? Are you, you know, it's a passion thing. What are you thinking at this point that you're working full time and trying to write?
Well, I guess my master plan, if I had one, was I thought I would end up becoming a college professor or maybe a teacher of history, and that I would write during the summers. So that was kind of my plan. But I was taking every creative writing class I could while I was at college and learned a lot from several different teachers, had a great time with it, and kept wanting to publish. One of my teachers actually recommended a short story that I'd written, which was a fantasy short story. He said, this would make a great children's story. And so I submitted it to a magazine in New York and it got accepted. And that was my first publishing credit. And I thought, wow, this is easy. And no, it was not easy. But that story ended up becoming, leading to me self-publishing that story as a children's story. And I just kept thinking, what do I need to do? I kept turning in manuscript after manuscript, kept getting rejected. And one of the thoughts that I had was, well, I need to have maybe a following, maybe a fan base. That might make it easier for a publisher. And so that's when one of my mission companion friends and another friend of mine from high school got together and created Deep Magic. We did a magazine to be able to learn about the industry, to learn about, you know, interview some of our favorite authors. And that worked out really great. I got to meet, you know, my mentors, the many authors that inspired me during my college years by doing Deep Magic.
You know, I think a lot of times when you think about writing, you think of, okay, one person sitting alone, which is, I mean, when you're actually writing, but the feedback you get from other people to help you along the way is probably huge to help you figure out actually what direction you're going.
It's true. So having two good friends, my wife was one of my first critique partners who would read what I wrote. But you're right, it's a very lonely profession. You're mostly there by yourself, but it's that feedback that tells you whether or not you're hitting the right chords with a reader or not. And so having that experience of working with Deep Magic, being able to talk to editors and authors that I admired, kind of helped show me, as well as looking at all the submissions that came in. Because as I started looking at things with an editor's eye, I started to see, oh, so much of this stuff looks the same. How do I make my writing different? So all of this was kind of a process that I went through to understand what professional writing is really all about.
So what was the big break in there at some point? Because you're writing a lot, and it's got to be discouraging when you submit stuff and it gets rejected. So what happened to kind of turn the corner? It's like, okay, this is actually working.
Well, kind of a turning point moment happened for me around 2008. One of my favorite authors, the one whose book I had found in the library when I was in junior high, came to the Bay Area to do a writing seminar for a one-day Saturday class. And I remember seeing that in the mailbox, and I told my wife, I said, I've got to be there. This is my dream come true, to have a chance to submit some of my writing to him for feedback and to attend his class all day. So I did. And he said something during that class that really kind of surprised me and kind of, you know, made me think. The advice he gave, and he attributed it to Stephen King, who may have said this, and I haven't been able to find whether Stephen said it or not, but the advice was, after you've written your first million words, then you're ready to start, you know, and really you got to get the words out first, and it takes that much practice. So I went back home after that class with him, and I added up all those books I wrote in high school, the books I wrote in college, the books I rewrote, you know, just trying to make it better, the articles and stories I'd written for Deep Magic. And it came out to 980,000 words. And I had never really thought about how much practice I had done. And when I went to that class with Terry Brooks is his name, when I went to his class, I was trying to think, which of these three novels do I want to, you know, really focus on as my next thing? And after that class, I realized none of them. Mm. Those were all part of my practice.
Wow.
So I literally just threw them all away.
Wow.
And the next thing that I wrote, The Wretched of Muirwood, was the book that actually landed me my publishing deal. Mm. Didn't happen immediately, but it was that millionth word later that made it happen.
Yeah, as we say, the overnight success that started 20 years ago.
Right? Exactly.
But you self-published first. Why did you decide to go to that route? Was it, you know, rejections from the publishing companies? Was it, okay, do you want to get out there? Why did you go that route?
You know, I tried the traditional route. I submitted to over 40 different agents. I knew editors at most of the major publishing houses, and I just couldn't get anybody willing to take a look at the manuscript, except for one agent. And it's so exciting, right, to say, oh, I'm willing to take a look at the first three chapters. So I sent it to them, and I'm willing to look at the whole manuscript. And I thought, this is it. You know, this is going to be the moment, the opportunity, only to get it rejected, right? And so many authors have to deal with that rejection. You have to have a thick skin to be with this. And so I really thought, well, I can keep trying to get an agent, or self-publishing was becoming more popular. And I remember I got called as a bishop at that time, and I just said, I don't have time to focus on my writing anymore. I really need to focus on, you know, my calling and what I need to do. But I'd written that book, and I was still passionate about it. And I just felt, even while I was a bishop, I had this push, like, just get it out there. Let's just see what happens. You know, you're not going to spend any time marketing it. And so that those self-publishing platforms made it possible. And so I published all three of those books all together, put them out there in the world, and nothing happened still. And I just was like, oh my gosh, you know, how long is this gonna take? But I kept working on my calling, kept working on my career, kept raising my kids. And it turns out that my publisher, who's Amazon, began creating their own publishing companies. Mm-hmm. And they started looking at self-published authors like me. And when they created their own fantasy imprint, they actually recruited one of the chief editors out of New York, one of the top publishers. They recruited him. And I was one of the first books that he read that had been self-published. And he said, I got to pick up this series. And so he actually reached out to me. I didn't submit to him at all. Mm. They contacted me. And it absolutely changed my life. But I didn't jump ship right then and there.
So, you know, once you get here, was it 47 North, right? That's the company?
Yes.
So, you know, how did that come about? So that's got to be a pretty thrilling call. And you've been reaching out, and finally someone reaches out to you and says, hey, I like your stuff.
You know, I didn't even know 47 North existed. And if you know, Amazon's based in Seattle, that's where their headquarters is. And I think that's the longitude of Seattle is 47 degrees north. So it made sense. And so this person who I didn't know reached out to me and said, I loved your book, but I want to talk to you not just, you know, because I'm a fan. I want to know about what you're writing next. I'm interested in talking to you about acquiring you. So naturally, I Googled them and found out about who this was, realized that he came from one of the top publishers in New York. And so I remember you know, sending an email to my wife, like, you know, look at this email that I got. And she was just like, okay, don't freak out. You know, this is, who knows where this is going to go. But I started doing my homework about them. And I realized that, you know, Amazon's a tech company. I was working for a tech company. Yeah. It's like, I kind of understand how they tick. So we just had a conversation and I got to learn about how their publishing model was going to work. And I was very interested in working with a publisher that was going to be innovative in the space. I mean, publishing has been around for hundreds of years, but Amazon was going to be doing some innovation in that space. And I really liked that. I liked my Kindle. I liked being able to download a book without having to go to a bookstore. And I thought that might be interesting. So we had some conversations for a couple of months before they offered me a 6-book deal. Mm-hmm. They wanted the 3 books that I'd already self-published, and they wanted the series that I was working on next. Wow. And so I got an attorney to help make sure I understood the publishing contract. He had worked with other Amazon authors as well as the top 5. And so he said, their terms are very fair. They're very generous. They're not being taken advantage of. And I said, okay, let's just see what happens. And what was amazing to me is after they started selling my books, the sales were going well, but then they really started to take off. Mm-hmm.
That's got to feel pretty cool. You know, so you've got like, were these hard copy or these downloadable books originally?
Well, they were all 3 formats. Print, audio. I really wanted an audio book because my commute into Intel, I was always listening to audio books. And so I'm like, I want somebody to be able to listen to my books as they're driving into work. And that's a huge new trend, actually. Oh, yeah, people are doing that all the time. So it was in all 3 formats. And so I said, yeah, this works for me.
Well, it's got to be pretty cool, you know, to self-publish it and then see your published book and, you know, the cover, the whole thing. It's like, this is, you're a real author, right? When you feel that book in your hands for the first time, it's got to be a pretty cool experience.
Yeah, they send you author copies, right? Mm-hmm. They send you a box, and there's nothing like opening up that box and just seeing these copies. It's just an amazing experience. And then when I got to listen to the audio version, just driving to work every day of my own book, it just, I have to admit, I geeked out a little bit. Saying, this is just, I had never imagined that something like that would have been able to happen. And all these years later, before it being able to happen.
Yeah, that's totally cool. Well, this brings you to a point where you're working at Intel. Now, they want these books. That's a lot of work. So you, at some point, you got to take the leap. Am I going to be a full-time author, or am I going to try and do this on the side? How did you come to the decision, I'm going to leave the security of that full-time job and jump into being a full-time author?
Well, believe me, I know authors that made that jump as soon as they got their publishing contract. And I was much more conservative about that because I didn't know how they were going to do. And even after the first book started selling really well, it's like, well, is this a flash in the pan? Is this going to last? So I had a commitment to write 1 book a year and to be able to finish that new 3-book series. And I was able to hit those milestones. And I figured that was going to give me some time to see how are things selling, what does it look like? Because having all these books coming out at the same time was kind of an anomaly. That normally doesn't happen. Yeah. And so I started watching it. And as I watched the success start to happen, I realized, I said, you know, I think I can make this a full-time career. But I also knew that if I wanted to be successful, as a lot of self-publishing authors are, you need to write more than 1 book a year. Mm. That's more what's happening and more standard today. And I knew I couldn't do that with the calling I had, as well as a job at a company like Intel. And so when I had that conversation with Amazon, I said, instead of for my new publishing contract, how about we publish 3 books a year instead of 1? And that was not what they were used to. I mean, they'd done the books up front, but they showed that they could do that. They could hit that production schedule. And they said, well, we think we could make that happen. So we had that conversation. And once I got that contract with them to be able to publish it, I gave my notice to my manager. And he thought I was crazy. Yeah. It's like, you're working at Intel. Why would you want to leave the security of that? But it had been a couple of years, and I had seen what that normal was looking like. And we decided to make that jump. And of course, you know, my wife was very nervous about it. We were all nervous about it. But we thought about, what would we need to do to prepare our family for that? And we discussed what those plans were, like paying off our house, right? Yeah. Not having a mortgage would make a big difference. Knowing we had to pay for our own health insurance. Can we afford all those things? We kind of did all the number crunching in advance and said, I think this makes sense. And we did that, and I've never looked back. It's really been the best decision I've ever made.
What's it like to be able to go to your work, you know, to your office in your house and do what you're passionate about? I mean, not many people really get that total opportunity. Some you've loved since you were in grade school. What's that, you know, feeling like for you to be able to do that?
You know, I, as I've been asked that question, sometimes I answer that the worst day of being an author is still better than the best day I had when I was working at a tech company. And it's true. I love the job. I love the fact that I'm there for my kids when they come home from school, that I can go to their concerts, that I don't have business trips, that things that would pull me away or things like that. So I really feel like I'm closer with my kids, my family, and with my wife than I had been before. A lot of the principles I learned working at Intel on being time management, being able to, you know, be business minded was something that was very helpful, because now I have to run my own business as an author. And so all that experience at Intel has actually only benefited my experience as an author for sure. But I have to admit, I mean, I feel so blessed that this opportunity was given to me. It's like I literally didn't even go out and find it. It came to me.
That's awesome. Yeah, we only have a couple minutes left, but I want to talk to you about the creative process, because it's got to be a kind of a cool feeling. You're creating characters, worlds, fantasy. How do those kind of, obviously it's been something that's been, you know, in your mind for years, starting as a kid. How does that process work for you as you're creating these scenarios, these stories?
Well, for me, there's kind of an incubation period that happens. So a different story idea can come from many different ways. For example, when my family went to the Piano Guys concert, and they happened to have on the big screen behind the performers some video footage of this place in Scotland. And as I'm staring at this video footage, a story idea came to me. And what I usually do when I get those ideas is I pull out my phone, I send myself an email, just kind of capturing the nuggets of the idea. And then I kind of file it away. And I let that story incubate, that idea. Sometimes different stories might come from different ideas where I smash them together. So for me, I don't start writing a story until it's been incubating for a while first. And to me, that's part of the fun of the process is while I'm driving somewhere or while I'm at the grocery store, my imagination is always working, is always making connections, coming up with new characters that might be able to sit in that story. And when I finally feel like it's incubated enough, then I'll say, okay, this is the story I'm going to write next. And I'll pitch it to, you know, my publisher and say, this is what I'd like to do. And they've always said yes. So that's been nice to be able to pursue even different things, not just, you know, stories that I've always written, but trying something brand new, like a story I did based to kind of in a ancient China. They were very open to try something new and different.
Tell me what you're working on now, and for people who aren't familiar with your work, give us like a brief synopsis. So maybe like the latest book you're working on, the one that's coming out the most recently.
So the series that just started coming out within the last few weeks is called the First Argentines series. And it's part of my King Fountain universe, which has been my most popular series. And I was inspired by a piece of medieval history that I learned about in college that's just been kind of sitting in the back burner for so many years. And this is going to be a 4-book series because it's the story of a knight who is serving different kings within that realm of King Fountain. And I've always been attracted to characters that have really difficult moral dilemmas that they have to face, but they choose to be good guys. A lot of what's popular in fantasy today is called grimdark, where people, you know, or maybe villains who are the heroes. And that's never attracted to me. I've always been more interested in somebody who role models certain kind of values, but has really hard and difficult things. So I get to beat up my characters really, really, and put them in really soul-stretching experiences. But I'm inspired by characters and stories that where people overcome those kinds of things. So this 4-book series is one that all 4 books are coming out within 12 months.
Wow.
And so I've actually finished writing it. And I'm going through edits right now on the final book, but we've got all of them lined up to be able to finish by January of 2022.
Wow, wow. Lots of work. That represents a lots of work. You've been writing furiously.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, if people want to find out more, you know, interested, say, I'd like to check out Jeff's books. You got a website, they can check it out, jeffwheeler.com?
Jeff-wheeler.com. There's another Jeff Wheeler out there who stole the URL, but I got that hyphen in there, and that works. And it has a little excerpts of all of my world. So that way some people like starting with this one, some people like starting with this one. I like having little background details on all of them so that people can come and browse and see. And if and some people say, well, which one should I start with? I even have a reading order, which is my suggestion. Like, I'd start here with this one, because sometimes we've got 30 choices. Which one do you start with? Yeah. I like to make it a little bit easier.
It's nice to have a lot of choice, too. That's great. Well, Jeff, it's been a pleasure to talk with you. I wish you the best with your books that are coming out and in the future. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate you coming.
You're welcome. Thanks, Brian.